the destination of this coach is Hazard, Kentucky. Do there at 5:15. For your convenience, there's a restroom located in the rear of the coach.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. It's JG's Radio Free Insanity with your host, James Gutman. Yo, Gutman, what's the ish?
What's up, guys? That is right. My name is James Gutman, and you are tuned in to JG's Radio Free Insanity right here on WorldWrestlingInsanity.com for the weekend of June the 17th, 2006, and I guess before we go any further, I just have to clarify one thing. This week's edition is actually JG's Extreme Radio Free Insanity for June the 17th, 2006. I've actually learned that everything sounds a little bit better if you put Extreme in front of it. So, yeah, WWE has taught me that. Joey Styles has taught me that. Every other word out of his mouth, Extreme. So I'm going to start trying that. You know, you have a birthday party you have to go to, and you got somebody a crappy present. You hand it to them, and you go, here's your present. It's an Extreme present. And then it's better, and they don't think it's so crappy. See? So I help you guys out. So there you go. You're welcome. Yeah, you know what? I started trying to put together Radio Free Insanity this week, and although there was a lot going on, you had the Foley Flair confrontation, you had Slammiversary on Sunday, and you had the issue of D-Generation X. It kind of felt weird to talk about something besides ECW, because that seems to be the big story of the week. The fact that it was such a big deal on Sunday, such a bad deal on Tuesday, really epitomizing the idea of going to extremes, more in the Billy Joel song sense than in the ECW sense, in that we went from one extreme on Sunday of people really literally, you know, I love ECW and I'm going to sell my clothes and my kids so that I can take all my money and put it towards ECW. And then on Tuesday, people are like, I just watched the ECW show and I shot myself in the head. And now I'm half dead, half alive, but I just wanted to write this message board posting to tell you all that I hated the show. So, I mean, it was one extreme to the other. And it's so fitting that it happened like that. So we started getting together trying to figure out exactly what type of show to give you guys this week, and I figure we'll do the same thing we did for WrestleMania. We're about to be joined on the phone line by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com columnist, a contributor to World Wrestling Insanity, the book, and a hell of a good guy, former WWE employee, knows so much about this industry. Dr. Tom Pritchard going to join us on the phone line. Dr. Tom was a member of WWE for years, knows the mentality of the people that work there, knows kind of how the machine works. Thankfully, he was never really a part of that big kind of corporate mentality that goes into things. So we're going to be talking a little bit about ECW and exactly how the McMahons probably approached the situation, his thoughts on the show, things that he noticed. So yeah, we're going to get him on the phone line and we're going to go right into it. But guys, prepare yourselves because this week's edition is extreme. Let's cue him up and let's welcome him to the phone line. Just press one little button here. All right, so Tom, what's up, man? Tom Pritchard, how are you, dude?
I'm doing great. How are you today, man? This has got to be one of the greatest weeks ever. I mean, an ECW pay-per-view and an ECW show on Sci-Fi. I don't know what anybody else could ask for.
I don't know if it really gets that. I mean, and then we have Kevin Nash doing an X Division match on Sunday. So it's just a trifecta of excitement for...
You know what? Actually, I totally forgot about the Kevin Nash X Division. I was just talking to Les Thatcher, and he did explain to me that Kevin Nash wrestled the midget, I
yes,
think, on TNA.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
So, well, you know, Kevin is a pro, what can you say?
I don't know, man. Well, I mean, maybe it's just preparation for maybe going to SmackDown and taking on the world champion. I'm just looking at it the way WWE looks at it. I mean, obviously, you know,
I know, and especially from seeing ECW, I think we both know that the way you normally see things as a wrestling fan or somebody in the industry is not always the way that the McMahon family in WWE sees something and how money can be made. And case in point, obviously, is Team Extreme.
Well, certainly, but before we even go any further, James, I'd really like to ask you as a favor to me, as a personal favor to me, would you keep the language clean?
Oh, sure. Oh, no, I that will not be a problem. This is a family show. I understand that.
I'm tired of your bullshit, and I don't appreciate you swearing on the air and things like that.
God damn it, Tom, you have my word, man.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, before anything, I mean, first of all, you saw both shows this week. You saw Sunday's One Night Stand, obviously, on the pay-per-view, and I mean, the reviews are not in as high as they were last year, and I mean, I think that the main difference between the two shows is that last year was kind of a standalone revival show, and this year kind of felt more like the introduction to a new kind of brand. Did you get that feeling watching the show?
Yeah, at the same time, I got the feeling that while I'm happy for everyone who has a job at ECW, I got the feeling that Kurt Angle is going to be the flag bearer, so to speak, which is great in a sense, but at the same time, I think people understand that Kurt Angle is a WWF-produced talent. When he first went to ECW, when ECW was really ECW, he was appalled. Of course, Kurt's attitudes and years that have gone by have changed him, but yeah, I got the sense that it was trying to rebrand itself in a new fashion, so to speak. And I got to be honest with you too. I hope for the sake of the guys who are on contract and on the ECW brand, that they can make something out of it. Watching the show in that building, Hammerstein Ballroom, you know what? Great feeling, great atmosphere. The fans were rabid. The fans were passionate, and I got to tell you, I was happy for the guys working that night, because you want to work in front of those kind of people. That's the kind of crowd, man, you go out there, whether you're cheered or booed, man, as long as they are that passionate about it, as a performer, that's the kind of crowd you want to work in front of. But again, that was the pay-per-view.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think the pay-per-view was funny because it was, I was saying before, this is really a week of extremes, if you're going to say extreme, because people were extremely kind of happy on Sunday, and they were extremely upset by Tuesday. And I think what's weird about the entire situation is that if you saw Sunday's show, as you said, it had that excitement and had that good feeling to it, then Tuesday's show rolled around and felt more like a brand. And my question is, they're already having a hard time balancing out the brands as it is. SmackDown is constantly being, you know, referred to as kind of the B show, and SmackDown doesn't have this, SmackDown doesn't have that. If you're having a hard time balancing out Raw and SmackDown, why add a third one into the mix now?
Well, once again, I think the original idea probably was to have a third brand and be completely different and have that alternative fan base. I think that was the original idea. Excuse me. But after watching Tuesday, I think what you just got was a third brand.
Absolutely.
I didn't feel that ECW feat, man. And what ECW was, for the old-time fans, they know what ECW was. I won't go into that. But and it's been made evident and by WWE and Paul E. both that this is a new ECW. This isn't going to be the old ECW. Well, that's fine, but it still has to be different from Raw or SmackDown if you're going to make it, you know, a completely different brand.
Absolutely.
And honest to goodness, real quick, my feelings on it is this. I had the opportunity to go to the old bingo hall and work Philadelphia, I think about 4 or 5 shots for ECW, man.
Uh-huh.
And the people in that building made the show. They made the matches. They gave you that extra. It was an energy that you felt.
Uh-huh.
On Tuesday, as you and I have discussed, it was a SmackDown setting. It was a SmackDown crowd. And sure, there were some ECW fans there, I'm sure. But the majority were there to see SmackDown. And, you know, I watched, I don't know if it was what segment it was after, but they had an on-camera with Taz and Joey Styles. And I looked at the one of the fans behind them, and he's rolling his eyes and putting his head down like, oh, my God, when is this going to get over?
Yep.
You know, man, you can't have that. ECW was an attitude. ECW was a movement, and people say it was a cult. Yeah, man, it was a cult. It was about people being part of what it was. And you had your hat guy, you had your fans in the front row who everybody knew. They made it. They made the guys feel when they went out there. And
absolutely.
Right now, that's missing.
Well, you know what's funny is that, I mean, and I'm going to compare the McMahons to somebody that I don't think they've really ever been compared to, but in Ric Flair's book, there's actually this little section about how Jim Herd wanted to turn him into Spartacus at one point.
Yeah.
And how everyone was saying it's so ridiculous because you have Ric Flair, you have this guy who's known for a specific thing, and you want to change his name, you want to change what he's about, and everyone came down, Jim Herd's a moron, he's a pizza guy, he's this, he's that. Isn't that effectively what the McMahons are doing with ECW? They have ECW, they own it, they own the name, they own the rights, and they're basically turning it into Spartacus for no reason whatsoever, just taking this name that has a recognition with it, and they're saying, you know what, it's recognized as something, it's known as something, let's make it something completely different. Why? I don't know why.
I don't know, and this is just my speculation, but I don't know that Vince, who makes the final call on everything,
uh-huh.
Knows what ECW really was.
Okay.
I don't believe he really was, you know, he knew it was extreme. He knew you had Austin, well, he didn't know what Austin did on ECW. It was Jim Ross who followed ECW and had that vision who presented it to Vince, who gave Austin the opportunity. But I don't know that Vince understands the full concept of what made ECW work on the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
I know ECW ventured out a few places, and I think they did good business. But I also believe, and I don't know this, but I also believe there's people in certain places who do understand what ECW was, and who do understand ECW successful, and who are pound and determined to make sure that doesn't happen.
Uh-huh.
Conspiracy theories out there all the time, no doubt. But just by watching Tuesday's show, good Lord, the ECW movement was about being anti-establishment, going to the edge, and you can't do that if the guy making the decision doesn't understand how ECW got that edginess. Vince loves to go to the edge. Vince loves to push the envelope, but he wants to push it his way.
Absolutely.
And from what I understand, he's also constrained by sci-fi requests and rules and things like that. So, I mean, a lot of things, I don't know about a lot of things, but there's a few things that might be holding ECW down that are out of Vince's control as well.
No, I mean, I totally see that with certain aspects of it. I think that there were things on Tuesday, certain elements of the show, that you can kind of look at and say, well, that was kind of out of his control. But I think that if you were to look between really Sunday and Tuesday, just the extreme difference between the two shows, and I don't want to go into Sunday's show one... Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, I don't want to go through Sunday's show one by one because I think that a lot of us have kind of watched it. I mean, there are certain points of it that I really wasn't too happy about that I did want to get your opinion on, though. for starters, you got Funk and Dreamer against Edge and Foley. And I'm watching this match, and the one thing I kept thinking of, and I don't know if anyone else caught or anyone else thought like this, but for years, WWE started slowing down their style so that fans wouldn't be too excited about, you know what I mean? Like, they would be able to pop for things besides just, you know, jumping off of buildings and things like that. And I noticed that earlier in the night, you had Randy Orton and Kurt Angle, and they're booing the chin locks, and they're booing the rest holds. And then three matches later, you have Terry Funk being cut out of barbed wire. I mean, do you think that was kind of a step back between that and the finish of the Sabu match to kind of have these extreme spots after they tried to get away from it on their own broadcast?
Well, let me just clarify something, too. WWE cut back the style because there were so many injuries, and that was the reason due to the... I mean, and that's what ECW will find out if they run as much as they want to run. You can't do that style and stay healthy. That's what Vince tried, but it came to be where the guys were killing themselves, literally, and you can't have that. But to your point about, man, the finish on Sabu and Mysterio, yeah, oh my goodness, I thought, for an ECW crowd to see this, yeah, they, I'm sure they were disappointed. And then here's Terry and Dreamer going out with Edge and Foley. You also have to understand the relationship with the people involved. You know, I think Nick and Funk and Edge could get away with doing that. They had a little more leeway and they had a little more leverage, whereas you have the Wolf and Rey Mysterio against Sabu. How are they going to get out of that? They can't put the belt on Sabu. But, you know, could they have done something better than DDT and have the trainer come out and say, no, they're not going to fight anymore?
That was, you know what's funny about that? It wasn't even, there was no sense of realism to that at all. I mean, they haven't been back when bow tie, they haven't been doing a squeaky voice. It was insane.
Right. That's the part that doesn't fit the puzzle. I mean, it just doesn't fit in there. It was kind of like, oh, you're kidding me. So, I mean, yeah, there were some real jagged edges to that point, to that part of the show, I can only imagine what the conversations were, what people were thinking during that.
Well, what's funny with Ray, and this is what I don't get it. I mean, we're sitting here and we're saying that you know, there really was no way out of that match. And what's funny about the entire situation is that Ray is a world champion, and the idea of him going over Sabu doesn't really come up in anyone's mind. Not because Sabu's a new wrestler, because normally if a new guy came in and you wanted to kind of give him a push, it really wouldn't be any dishonor in jobbing to the world champion. Problem with Ray is that everyone has beaten Ray, so that you can't have him go over Sabu, because then Sabu looks bad, even though Ray is a world champion. You know what I'm saying? Mark Henry, Great Khali, all these people going over Rey Mysterio have now made it to the point where Ray can't go over somebody and have that person still look good because, well, everyone beats Ray. You see what I mean?
And that's something that I sit back and I watch and I you know, as a world champion, somebody said one time the world champion is the biggest jobber in the world, the guy who puts everybody over. Well, he is, but he also gets over in the process. And you have Ray, who's what, 5'6"?
Yeah.
100 bucks 70, $1.80. You have to protect him. I have seen him have matches with Brock Lesnar that look incredible. Then you put him in there with Mark Henry and Khali and these guys, and I don't see him being protected at all.
I mean, it's just Finley over.
And all he's doing is carrying the belt. I mean, he puts it in his bag, goes out, has a match now and then, and you know, walks away the world champion. Is that getting him over? I don't know. Do people like to see him? Yeah. Once he gets rid of the belt, can he stay consistent and have people, you know, cheer for him? I don't know, man. Maybe this is something that is an underlying plan that creative has, and who knows, because I have no idea what's going on in their minds these days.
Doesn't mean
quite
anything.
Honestly. But you're right. There was no way out with the Sabu Ray match, because he couldn't beat Sabu to ECW, on an ECW card, because it would have made Sabu look like crap, because everybody else has beaten him, and Sabu is the suicidal, homicidal, genocidal, reticidal, valet, whatever. What did it say?
Oh, absolutely. No,
he would kill him off.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think the thing with Sabu is that Sabu had gotten, it was such a bizarre build-up. I mean, he was brought in, they just gave him the world title match, didn't really give any reason for it. I think one of the weird things, at least for a non-ECW fan, and this is something that I can't speak to, and you probably won't be able to either, but for a casual fan who doesn't really watch, never really watched ECW, doesn't necessarily watch WWE Weekly, what do they think when they tune in and all of a sudden here's this guy that they've never, you know, seen on the company before getting a world title match? And I think a lot of the ECW revival has confused a lot of the casual fans, just because you really don't know where anything stands, where these guys have been, and who the baby faces and heels are. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I do. And that to me is a confusing part too, because I know Vince wants the casual fans to tune in, and going back to the original idea of grasping a new brand, but also bringing the old ECW fans back, I believe that was his idea, to bring some of the old guys back, get the old ECW fans back, and in the process, get the casual fans interested as well with watching what Sabu could do, watching Sandman go out and just cane people. But you don't have, I mean, he has his interest in music, but the casual fans who don't know who Sandman is,
uh-huh,
might take him as a Stone Cold ripoff, whereas it's actually the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? It's confusing on a lot of grounds. I mean, it's you're trying to get the casual fans interested. You're trying to bring back some of the old fans, and I think in the process you're turning off the old fans and you're confusing the living hell out of the people. Oh, I said hell, I'm sorry.
No, it's just, I don't give a shit.
Living hell out of the people who just tune in to be entertained.
Absolutely, man. I think one of the funny things is, I mean, I watch it every week, and there were some segments on Raw prior to One Night Stand with Cena and Van Damme, and you're left wondering, you're like, well, who's the babyface here? Who are we supposed to be cheering?
Yeah, no kidding. And the people, actually, the casual fans, WWE fans, actually want to cheer Rob.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, they've been booing, you know, for so long, but he came across as the babyface in that deal.
Uh-huh.
You know, here he is fighting, I don't know how many guys that came down. I mean,
I mean, John Cena?
Yeah.
Oh, they said Rob. No, yeah, no, totally. I totally hear what you're saying with that, with Cena. I think that Van Damme has been booked in a way that WWE expects to get the cheers, and if it was a legitimate ECW crowd, if they were doing this at ECW Arena in 2000, they would be cheering Van Damme. The problem is you're in front of a SmackDown crowd, you're in front of a Raw crowd, and you have this guy, Rob Van Dam, who to casual fans is seen as exciting, but never really this great. He's kind of a mid-carder to a lot of guys who don't know him from ECW. And he's out there, and he's talking about taking the WWE title to this company that they're not familiar with, and WWE is wondering why no one's cheering. And it's just, to me, it's like, well, duh. You know, when it plays out, you kind of see it.
Right. Well, again, I got to see Van Damme in his early years, and he really is talent. But somebody said it best. He's like the Antonio Rocca of, you know, the 2000,
mm-hmm,
year 2000. You know, which means Rocca was a great draw. Rocca was a performer. Rocca could do all these spectacular things, but they made no sense. He didn't do them at the right time. But Van Damme is a spectacular performer. He really is. Now, here's the deal. It all changes once you stop chasing the title and you get it.
Yep.
It's a whole different story now. Now you're not chasing it. Now you're not the guy they're rooting for to get it. Now you got it. Now you got to change gears, and you have to be somebody that the people still want to get behind, want to see you keep the title, And I don't know, it's going to take Rob a little time to make that transformation, I think.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, do you think he chased it long enough? That's one of the things. I think the money with Van Damme was kind of in maybe a long chase with Triple H on top and then having him take it from him. But, I mean, I kind of feel like here's a guy, people who are fans of Van Damme have been waiting years for him to take the title. And it was kind of like a two-week build-up. He got it. No one was even sure if he really won it because at the end of One Night Stand, it was kind of like, did he win it? Didn't he win it? So, in a way, it kind of felt like years and years and years of preparation for this moment that really kind of felt somewhat flat in the end because it was almost non-committal in a way.
Well, yeah, to a point. That is true. And I think the Rob Van Dam fans on Sunday were real happy about it because finally, you know, he reached his goal. And you know, but you're right. It was that point to where, well, are they going to take it back from him Monday because Paulie made the count?
Yeah.
I think they made a good move on Monday by having Paul come with the promo at the first show saying, hey, it will stand because it was an EC under ECW rules. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that was good. But now, like I say, what they do going forward is going to be the interesting thing to me. I want to see how the fans react to Van Damme now that he's the ECW world champion. And what a nice belt they gave him, huh?
Yeah, it was that guy.
Now that he's the ECW world champion, he beat their WWE champion. So, obviously, that leaves in WWE land only the world champion, I guess.
Who everyone beats.
Huh?
Who everyone gets to pin. Rey Mysterio.
So I mean, it's to steal somebody's line or to steal a phrase, it's world wrestling insanity going wild.
Absolutely. Well, the movie
yeah, man.
Well, but I mean, going off of the Sunday show, and here's one thing that always stuck out to me, and it's really a pet peeve for me on shows like this. The WWE title is off of Raw. It's been taken away. It's been sent to ECW. It's gone off the show.
Yep.
I kind of felt like on Monday, no one cared. I mean, wouldn't you think that if the top title on a show, and just in the logical fantasy wrestling world of Raw, shouldn't the people be going crazy, like the performers on Raw, like, oh my God, we don't have a world champion? It's kind of like life goes on, and it just moves on. And it in a roundabout way, it really cheapens the title because you would think that a show without a world champion, it would kind of be mass chaos, and there should at least be a bigger deal made of it. It was kind of like, yeah, well, no more world champion here. Yeah, I mean, it didn't really seem like they were all that broken up over it.
Yeah, well, and I go back to what I said earlier. I think there are some, and I hate to be a conspiracy theorist. Is that the word theorist?
Yeah. I think, yeah, in a roundabout way.
Yeah, sure, in a roundabout way. Oh, okay. Well, you can go to hell, too.
Why? Bunch of language.
I believe it might have been, and I don't know, but it wound up this way. If it was indeed designed to diminish or demean the title, I think it was designed to demean or diminish the ECW title and not make it as important in a roundabout way or indirectly, because I still don't believe the casual fans quite understand what ECW was. I mean, how long has ECW been out of business?
Oh, it's been, since 2001, right? Oh, 2000, 2001. So it's been over 5 years.
It's long enough for, you know, the kids that were 10 then or 16 now, and they've moved on too, and some fans have just moved on. I mean, there's, and the hardcore fans are always going to be there. You're always going to have your hardcore fans, but you also had that group of fans who came because it was rowdy, it was rock and roll, it was, you know, drugs, sex, and rock and roll. It really was.
Absolutely.
So, to go on Raw, all of a sudden say, hey, I'm going to keep this belt, I'm going to take this belt, and this is going to be the ECW title. Okay, so what? ECW stands for what? I mean, not too many people, they know it's Extreme Championship Wrestling, but I think the brand that everybody really relates to and understands and knows, especially after at the end of that pay-per-view, at the end of the show on Tuesday, that little spot in the corner says W or World Extreme Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So it is produced by WWE. It's no longer a standalone company. It really never was a standalone company.
Yeah,
until, you know, I mean, in the end, in the beginning, yeah, it was Todd Gordon, and when Eddie Gilbert was booking, and then Paul came in and took over, and sure, they were standalone, but all of a sudden, Vince realized, and Vince is a smart guy.
Hmm.
You know, it's in the East, on the East Coast, and Paul had connections with people in WWE, and it was a deal made. So, I mean, WWE has owned or supplemented ECW long before they owned the company.
But I mean, but is it kind of that suspension of disbelief, though? I think that at least in the old ECW, I mean, we all knew it. I mean, they had the angles with Van Damme and Sabu playing the WWF Crusaders and all that kind of stuff. But it was kind of, it was still the feeling of it's a different place, it's a different company, it's a different owner at the end of the day. And I kind of think that now it's really like, it's just right there in everyone's faces now. It's not like a winky-winky kind of behind-the-scenes thing, kind of like in the 80s when Vince was the owner, but never said it on TV. You kind of knew it, but you didn't really think about it if you watched the shows, because he was just the announcer ringside in the pink suit. Now, back when the ECW stuff, it was, you knew that Vince was supplementing them, you knew that he was having a hand in it, but he didn't show up on the shows, he wasn't there, it wasn't a WWE product. And now it's like they really... They couldn't take standing behind the scenes anymore. It had to be a WWE product. Because this would have been a very easy thing for Vince McMahon to produce as a separate entity and continue to kind of keep kayfabe in that respect and pretend like they don't own ECW. You know what I mean?
Well,
but it was a bit much. Yeah.
No, I just think that the kayfabe part would have... Because ECW was about, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think ECW was about, you know, people... being so smart, coming to the show and watching these guys just go balls to the wall and hardcore and proving that they were different than WWE, that was the attitude. And Vince was okay with that, supplementing those guys, and it was still kind of Paul's company.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, those people would have found out anyway, and it would have been the same thing. Oh, man, you sold out, you sold out, you sold out. So, I don't know.
You kind of had to. Yeah, no, I see your point. You kind of had to admit it.
Yeah, in this day and age, the real fans who want to find out are going to find out, and the casual fans, the one that Vince is going for, with the merchandise and the show, the T-shirts and all that other stuff that, you know, they might have a, you know, a cool-looking T-shirt come out and want to buy it or whatever with ECW. It's supposed to be the alternative, but it's always going to have that WWE flavor.
Very much. Oh, totally. I mean, I think the thing is, anybody who doubted it, because that was funny, on Sunday they did the Hammerstein Ballroom show, and people were loving it, man. I mean, they were forgetting that it was a WWE show. People were really getting the feeling that this was an ECW show, and anybody who thought that, that got knocked the hell out of your head on Tuesday when you tuned in to Tuesday Night Heat on Sci-Fi. You know, I mean, I think that was such a big culture shock. And what went, for you, watching the show, when you first tuned in and you first started to realize what the show was going to be like, what went through your head watching this?
Man, come on. No, I watched it. Here's what it reminded me of. Do you remember when... the North American Championship with Dennis Carluzzo that was brought in by Jim Cornette.
Yeah, with Jeff Jarrett and Barry Windham and that whole, I remember that.
And the NWA.
Yep, and Jeff wore when he wore that big space suit like George Jetson to the ring, that big long white, I remember what you're talking about. Yeah, it did.
Yeah, okay, yeah. NWA coming, boy, we're different. Yeah, here we come. Here you come, right to this show, produced everything.
Yeah,
WWE. That's exactly what I saw. Yeah, I saw the entrance, but if you don't have those intimate settings as ECW had, if you don't have those fans there, man, with the signs like, "Hey, Van Damme, let's go out and I got a blunt, whatever." You know what I mean?
No, I don't mean.
that is ECW. It was about the rowdy. You know, I love the sign that said, if Cena wins, we riot.
Yep, yep. That was a big thing.
That was ECW, because if Cena went over, there was going to be a riot. They were going to start. I mean, who can forget the scene with the chairs being thrown in the ring? Funk's in the ring, and I think Public Enemy's there, and they're all under the
chairs. When they call for the chairs? Yeah.
Yeah, that was ECW, but in a SmackDown setting, it's too clean, it's too sanitized, it's not, and you had WWE guys all over the place.
Yeah.
It was an hour show, it was, yeah, you know, and I got that feel, you know, that I understand they said they were going to shoot it differently, and it's going to be... but it's still being produced by the same guys who have an idea what they think ECW was and should be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Well, I think the people who are producing these shows now have just an idea of how wrestling should be. It's not clicking, and I that's what really cracks me up about the whole situation. I think creatively, it doesn't take much to really look at the product right now and realize that when it comes to new ideas, I mean, they could do nostalgia up and down the wazoo and make a ton of money off of, you know, Legends contracts and 24/7, because people love nostalgia, you know, from periods where you can go back and pick and choose what were the top draws of each period. Of course, you're going to make money by going back to top draws from each period. But I think when it comes to the new ideas, new angles, new storylines, new characters, they're kind of missing the boat over and over again. And here they are now taking something else that made money, and they're putting their same spin on it, the same spin that isn't working in other avenues, and they're putting it onto this brand.
Let me just say this real quick, because I'm not sure where you were going to go with that, but to put it in a nutshell, if it's making money for Vince or WWE, it's working. If people are turning it off, and if their revenues fall, it's not working. As long as he doesn't care if you like the show, hate the show, if you're buying the merchandise, and if you bought a ticket, it's working.
Yeah, but here's where I'm confused on. This is the thing about Vince, and maybe you can do it because you knew him. I mean, you know him. I don't really know him. With the situation of Vince McMahon, his deal has always been, he's always looked for that next step. I mean, he's the guy who says, I took wrestling out of the smoky arenas in the 80s, and I made it a family entertainment thing. I took it in the 90s, and I made it this global phenomenon. And it kind of seems now that a lot of people are saying, well, Vince is making money, what is everyone complaining about? And I kind of feel like Vince McMahon has not made an attempt to take that next step in over 10 years, you know? And to me, it's what made me excited about wrestling, what I always liked about it, was the fact that he was always trying to reinvent himself and look for something new. And now, as opposed to doing that, I kind of feel like he's actually taking things that worked before and putting his same old spin on it, rather than trying to reach that next ring. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, there is no next step. And I think ECW, he didn't have to do it in the sense of the old ECW, but I kind of feel like he didn't put any new spin on it. He actually gave it a SmackDown spin. And it's like, where is this genius? He's supposed to be taking his next step, and he's supposed to be revolutionizing the industry every 5 years. I feel like it's been stagnant for 10 years, and this was an opportunity to not be stagnant, and instead he just went back to what his formula is for now. Do you know what I mean?
Well, what I have found, and have you read the JJ's book?
I read some of the Seagulls book, right?
Huh? Yeah.
That's just like Seagulls. I read some of it, not the whole thing.
Okay. Well, and he has, JJ in the book has a great point, but I've heard this before. The majority of these geniuses and smart people have smart people around them, and people who know what they're doing around them. I believe, knowing Vince, that he is looking every week to reinvent. He's looking every day to do something different. He's just not finding it. You got to really, you know, if you think about it like this. He's been doing this WrestleMania 20?
Yeah, it's like 22,
23. 23
yeah.
is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's 23 super big cards. you know, at 60 years old, as much of a workaholic and as much as this guy goes to the gym and stays sharp and focused and everything, even a genius gets burned out.
Uh-huh.
He's only human. As much as people don't want to believe that, he is only human. And I think, you know, we all get in a rut, but I heard on the radio the other day about the fourth quarters being down, and on the guy on the radio said analysts say that's because their big star, The Rock, has left. And that was years ago, and Austin was one of their big stars, too. Why didn't they mention Austin?
Yeah, people have his grab, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's looking for that next Rock. He's looking for that next Austin. Always, constantly. Hmm. Problem is, you get tapes to the office every day. You get phone calls to the office. I mean, because I took them. I watched them. There ain't a whole lot of Rock and Austin out there. And if there are, the thing is, you got to understand, Austin honed his craft in the territories where he could make mistakes, and he could come in and have people tell him to sit down and watch the matches and listen to different people and watch different things that got over or didn't get over during that time.
Yeah.
These days, you have OVW and Deep South. Well, you know what? That's great, but it's WWE stamped. You don't have that opportunity to go out and discover yourself and be who you are. They tell you who you are, and then you own your, you do it the way it is in OVW, and then they get you up in WWE and make you something completely different.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's the problem why Vince, somebody asked me one time, when years ago when the guys came in, they were ready to go on top. Yes, they were ready to go on top because they'd had years in the territories learning how to be on top, working with veterans, telling these guys what to do every night, and listening. That's how Austin learned. He listened to people. He got to work with top guys. He got to see how they acted behind the scenes. He quizzed them in the cars.
Yeah.
You don't have it these days. Vince is looking for that big star. He's looking for the big guy, but what he doesn't remember is that there's no place to hone your craft to where you work 6 to 7 days a week. Some territories work 7 days, twice on Sunday. It's not there. There's only so much you can learn in an empty arena. There's only so much you can learn by doing drills every day. Yes, I think drills are great these days, but the way you really learn this is in the ring in front of people in different towns every week.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's changed from the business. You don't have those veterans anymore that understand that. The other thing is getting away from the basics and fundamentals. Yes, it's showbiz, but guess what? It's always been showbiz.
Uh-huh.
The thing is, those guys understood how to get over. Nobody really understands how to get over these days. And that's a hard puzzle to figure out too.
Oh yeah,
Vince wants his guys to be entertainers, wants them to be superstars. When they walk through the airport, he wants them to be stars, be noticed. That's understandable. That's great. His first breakout stars: Savage, Hogan, Sheik, Duggan, all those guys were in territories before they got there.
Absolutely.
So, point being, let me get back to what I'm trying to say before I went on my rant. The ECW crew had their core audience. They had their core fans. Justin Credible, as an example, was put in a spot, and Paul knew how to use his strengths with Lance Storm. They've already buried Justin.
Yeah.
They've already just neutered him. So, you know, it's going to be that attitude that's going to make them either sink or swim. And right now, they need a lifeboat.
Well, I think the thing is, I mean, right now they're pushing, Sandman and Sabu are the top two, but I really don't know how long that's going to be before the temptation to start putting WWE guys over them, because I think one of the things that still cracks me up is that it has been so long since ECW. If ECW went out of business last year and they were doing this, it would make more sense. But I think the thing that really gets me is that it has been 5 years since the end of ECW, and where has Sabu been? And where has Sandman been? So it's almost like sending a little message saying, you know, these guys aren't good enough for WWE, but they are now just because they're associated with this name. And I think it is such a weird feeling, because for fans who have been following the business, they have to ask themselves, where were these people for the last 5 years, and why weren't they good enough to be on Raw and SmackDown? I think I told you, I have a friend of mine who's a casual fan, and when the ECW thing first got introduced, he actually thought it was the real ECW, and he had told me, he said, yeah, they're bringing that ECW back with all the guys that couldn't get on Raw, and now, I guess, you know, Kurt Angle and Big Show aren't good enough for the show anymore, because they have to go to ECW, too. And I kind of had to have the explanation to him that, well, it is WWE, but it made people really look at it not well, you know, people who don't really watch wrestling on a weekly basis, but those two especially.
Whoever wins the war gets to write the history books.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, WWE gets to write the history books. And, well, they have that right. Because they did. They went and beat everybody.
But it's taking money out of their own pocket, though. You know what I mean? But it's taking money, like, now that they own it. I had said this on PW Insider. They're still obsessed with being the biggest dog in the yard. But what they're not realizing is they own the yard. They're not a dog anymore. ECW, which is one of the dogs in the yard, WWE owns that dog. Do you know what I mean? So it's not. They don't have to really continue to prove how big they are, because everyone, ECW's success is now their success, but I still don't feel like they look at it like that.
No, but I mean, it's like this. If you have a toy, you're going to do what you want with that toy. And it's kind of like, it's a money-making vehicle, but it's also however they want to play with that toy. Is what they're going to do. And honestly, ECW it was great at one time when they had this attitude, and that's what brought the attitude era WWE. But I also believe that Vince is going to show everyone that when it comes right down to it, at the end of the day, his brand, his company, will not only kick Ted Turner's ass, will not only kick TNA's ass, but it'll kick his own ass.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Seriously, it's his company, but it'll kick, and that's something that I think Vince, it's in his DNA. Mm-hmm. He has to win at all costs. And not that, I mean, that's the competitive edge that drives guys like him and Bill Gates and whoever else you want to put in that category, because Vince is definitely, he is so intense about everything he does, he will not stop until he wins.
It may take him
years, but he's going to do everything he can to win.
Oh, yeah, but I think now it's become where it's not necessarily about long-term financial success anymore as much as it's about people's perception. That really means a lot to him. He doesn't really care about making $1 billion off of ECW as much as he cares about people seeing ECW as inferior to what he created himself.
Well, yeah, and I don't think that's a direct, I don't think he's doing it
on purpose.
Maybe,
yeah.
On purpose, but I think maybe indirectly, come on, let's not fool it. Ourselves or anybody else, certainly there are people in the company who have no desire to see ECW or Paul Heyman succeed. And by all means, if they have anything to do with it, they're going to either directly or indirectly sabotage it. But at the same time, here's the deal too. You have a guy like Kurt Angle who has that same competitive edge, that same drive and passion, who wants this brand to succeed if he's going to be the flag bearer of it. He's just got a lot of, I think they have an uphill battle.
Yeah.
Unless someone actually sits down and says, look, here's what we have to do. And here's what, it makes it sound like a great idea to Vince, because, like I said, in the end, it's going to be Vince's decision to do whatever.
Absolutely. Well, let's go through real quickly this debacle on Tuesday. I think one of the main things, first of all, the first opening segment that I think we've kind of gone over with Cena, Edge, and Rob Van Dam, and the reaction from the crowd that, in your opinion, do you think if that angle were to play out the way it played out in a different setting, do you think it would have been over? Because I kind of feel like it was scripted so similar to WWE scripts in that, you know, one guy's out, another guy's music hits, he comes out, and then one guy runs and someone else appears. It was very verse chorus verse, you know what I mean? Like very carbon copy of what you would see on WWE. Do you think that was a case of the crowd, or do you think that was a case of the writing?
Both. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think that just the way it was presented, and especially Edge, coming out and playing humble, and then spearing Van Damme, mm-hmm. and then Paul acting indignant, and then Cena coming behind. I just don't. I think, yes, in a different setting, it would have been written differently, obviously, mm-hmm. And it would have been done a hell of a lot different. I think there would have been a lot more violence.
Yeah.
And I just... But the thing is, I'm not feeling any heat with Edge and Van Damme,
mm-hmm.
or the whole Cena thing. I just don't... The interest to me was tepid at best.
What about not throwing away the WWE title? Because I think that was something a lot of people were expecting. They were expecting him to redo that Carluzzo Shane Douglas angle.
Like the who?
With Shane Douglas when he threw away the NWA title.
Shane and Funk. Well, yeah, that was ECW.
Uh-huh.
Though, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think people were expecting kind of a redoing of that angle, and instead
No. We're talking about ECW and Dennis Carluzzo's NWA.
Uh-huh.
There, we're talking about Vince McMahon's title.
Yeah,
and by God, it's Vince McMahon's show. I'll be damned if you're going to do anything like that on his show, because the WWE is bigger than anything else. WWE is bigger than any. Thing else.
Yeah.
So, while people would have expected it, that's where the, I don't want to say ignorance, but the...
Optimism,
yeah, maybe being optimistic, but also just kind of, not really being realistic,
mm-hmm.
Because, no, they're not going to... Because you never know. They might want to bring that WWE title back.
Oh, no, so I was expecting him to kind of do some angle where, you know, WWE never gave me a shot, so I don't want to have their title and blah, blah, blah. And instead of something up for Raw, I think it's, in the end, I don't know, because just seeing the two belts next to each other, I think, was the big problem. As you mentioned earlier, the ECW belt looks like a piece of shit. I mean, it's this
whoa.
Piece of garbage.
Don't
want to offend the wrong people. But I mean, standing next to the ECW title, that big sparkly, shiny, you know, it was so funny. It was like if you ever watch old Ren and Stimpy cartoons, and they try to show something nice and show something horrible, like the WWE title was this big, glowing, sparkly, beautiful gold thing, and the ECW title was like this booger-covered kind of garbage thing that he had on his shoulder. And I mean, anybody who saw those two titles next to each other, I think, kind of got the idea of what was above what else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, most definitely. I don't know if it was a subconscious thing. Right. But you know what I mean? It was definitely a contrast, and that's perception, and perception is reality.
Yeah.
So you know, man, it's It's one of those things that people have got to analyze where they want to go with ECW. Do they really, and if they do really want this to succeed, Paul go out on a ledge? And does Paul really want to go out on a ledge? I mean, once again, as we get older, we get more mellow, and Paul's already been there, done that. He was angry back then. He had a lot of things to be angry about and talk about. There's you know, he knocked WCW.
Uh-huh.
He knocked WWF at the time. Now who's he going to knock? WWE.
Yeah.
And they own the company, so what he says is going to be what they say.
Scripted. No, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of things. Like, I think that, well, another example was Joey Styles doing his Raw shoot about a month ago or whatnot, where he came out and, I'm tired of being a sports entertainment announcer, I'm tired of this, I'm tired of that. For anybody who saw the Tuesday show, it didn't sound like Joey was any different than he was on Raw. If anything,
right,
maybe he just said extreme a lot more. But even down to that, it was just silly because I think people were expecting something different from him and Taz, and instead they got, you know, Michael Cole and Taz version 2, in a way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it's going to be. Again, you're having it produced by the same crew who produces Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah.
So as different as you want to make it, it's still going to be the same. And the other thing is, real quick, too, from what I understand, the ECW shows were heavily post-produced.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
So I mean, that ain't going to happen if you got to do a live show on Tuesday.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you about the first match, because that was something that some people didn't really mind, but I think the timing of it was kind of funny and the setup for it. It was the Zombie and Sandman was the first match out of the gate. Do you think that sent a message to a lot of fans, the fact that they kind of had this comedy match as the first match of the new ECW brand?
Well,
and what do you think?
Once again, it was an hour show,
uh-huh,
and from what I understand, Sci-Fi wanted the Zombie and the Vampire, correct?
Well, actually, I heard that WWE wanted to do an Alien, and they nixed the idea, so they brought in the Zombie as kind of a compromise, but I think they wanted the Vampire, though. Although Paul Heyman, here's the funny thing, I don't know if you read this, on WWE.com, Heyman gave like a 3-hour interview or something, just pages where he tore on TNA and he tore on all these different things, but he kind of kept going on about how vampires are popular right now, and there's, I mean, it was 10 years ago, I guess, and the goth movement during the Gangrel time was kind of more topical than it is now, but Heyman tried to justify it, saying that they wanted to do the Vampire because that's what's cool with the kids.
Like I said, it's today ECW, but
mm-hmm.
Point is, it was an hour show. I think the thinking might there might have been get it out of the way,
mm-hmm.
You know, come in and just cane him, let him just get killed. And,
well, they had to save time. They had to save time for the stripper, man.
Oh man!
What was
yes,
that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, the inadequate stripper couldn't get the ball.
Well, you know what's horrible about that? Like, as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, I was saying, you know what, this is an hour. And the funny thing is, TNA has an hour. And all they ever talk about is how they don't have enough time for the hour. That's always been TNA's argument. Oh, we don't have enough time for an hour. We don't have enough time to show, you know, more than three guys. It has to be Jeff Jarrett because we don't have anyone else to show in an hour. WWE found time to give this stripper segments throughout the entire one-hour show that went nowhere. I said, with an hour show, to have this woman keep popping up, she's got to become a manager or something. There has to be something for her. And in the end, she just walked away. And it was the most amazing thing. I said, I can't believe they wasted time on this, and I can't believe WWE found another way and another time to actually make a stripper boring. I don't know how they keep doing that.
Well, it's World Wrestling Entertainment.
Mm.
And if you look at any gentleman's establishment, it says entertainment.
Yeah.
And I think what they're looking for is a variety.
My
issue has always been, man, good wrestling can be entertaining.
Yeah.
And you can have vignettes, and you can have segments that are different than just wrestling. But I think the mindset over there is, let's give them TNA, let's give them a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and we'll have everybody tune in.
Yeah.
What they're finding, I think, is they're losing people.
Absolutely. No, I think it really came down to, I think the wraparound for the show was good. I think if they had the stripper throughout the show and the matches and then the things in between that were good, people would kind of be more forgiving of it and say, well, they were trying to do something more extreme than they would do on the other shows, I guess, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it was kind of like just part of this, it almost seemed like a parody of ECW watching this on Tuesday. It seemed like a caricature of what, you know, the corporate mentality there kind of envisions when they think of ECW, in a way.
Yeah, and I'm sure it is. Again, whether intentional or not, it's just the people who are doing it are so removed, and were never a part of ECW. I think, I know Gerwitz and maybe Lagana and some of those guys went to the ECW shows to feel that passion, to feel what they did, but it's not translating.
No.
At all.
Well, I mean, can it though? I mean, with Vince McMahon making the final decisions, do you really have the power to make kind of an authentic ECW show? I mean, if he's the final say in everything, is it good intentions out the window and kind of let's write what Vince will approve so we don't have to do it again?
A lot of times, yes.
Mm-hmm. Sad. It really is sad.
I mean, that's his company, it's his money, so he has a final say. If he doesn't feel it, then it ain't happening.
Nah, man. Well, I mean, two more things before we just close this out. The invasion of Raw. ECW is going to go back to Raw on Monday, and they're going to bring their, I guess it's ECW Black and White or ECW Wolfpack, whatever they want to call them, which is just incredible. Balls Mahoney and Steven Richards, who works still with the company, I guess, coming out in the ECW T-shirts and getting beat up. Do you think that by doing this, it's too much like the Alliance, and it's too much like the NWO of taking something that's supposed to be a brand and instead making them into three bumbling fools who kind of go and get beat up by the big WWE guys on Monday?
That, I'll answer that again by saying it's ECW 2006.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I think that I don't know if there's that much of a vocal majority from the fans' viewpoint, and maybe I'm wrong, I hope I am, or a vocal majority in the locker room to rally and make Vince see that they want something completely different than what he's given him this past week. And until then, I think Vince is going to continue doing what he's doing and showing people that he's the boss.
Yeah.
He's going to run his show the way he wants it, and if it doesn't, because they're only going to run TVs and their SmackDown arenas, you know, once a week. Then they're going to do the house shows in the small venues, which may sell out, may get some interest. Problem is, if those TVs don't create interest, then you're going to have problems. And that's when Vince is going to have to readjust.
Absolutely.
And the bumbling idiots like, you know, Balls and Stevie and who else?
Just Incredible, actually. They had
just, well, see, those guys, you know, are going to get frustrated. But they're making a paycheck, and I think that's the way they look at it these days.
Absolutely. That was one of the things, I think, with, I think I've told, I did an interview when we were setting up the book, when I was putting it together, I kind of feel like if this was 5-6 years ago when there was the WCW, I would have had people lined up to contribute to kind of talk about the McMahon family, and it was hard to get people who you wouldn't even expect, you thought that weren't even in their good graces, who didn't want to badmouth or say anything that they thought could be construed as anti-WWE, because I think the goal right now is, let's work for him. If he puts me in a clown costume and punches me in the face for 3 straight weeks, I'm cool with it, as long as, you know, because I mean, there's really nothing out there right now as far as what people can go to for alternative forms of income.
And you know what? I understand that completely, and I do, because I, for everything that I have been through, I respect Vince immensely. You know, I like Vince, and I've said this before, we're by no means close personal friends, we're hanging on the weekends, but I like Vince. We've had heart-to-heart talks, and a lot of people haven't, but you see one side of him, and 10 minutes later you see another side of him, and you understand that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But he can control your very life, and he does if you're in WWE.
Absolutely.
You don't want to burn that bridge if you want to go back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I understand that, and that's why the guys are so hesitant to be misperceived or misconstrued by anything they say.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's engineered the industry right now. That's kind of like that's your only alternative. He's made it in that kind of Billy Graham kind of world where, you know, you have a choice. You can either have your, you know, I don't want to say your pride in a way, but you can have, you know, essentially your pride or your legacy. It's your call. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Exactly.
Because he owns it.
Exactly. And you have to understand that the mentality of wrestlers too. you have an ego to get in this business anyway, and look at Bret Hart.
Uh-huh.
Bret Hart would never go back to WWE. Shake hands with Vince McMahon, that son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Hell no. Come on. You know, Bret wanted his legacy to be lived on, and you know, look what Bret did. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's right. All I'm saying is, even Bret Hart, the most anti-Vince McMahon, anti-WWE person, shut up the Hall of Fame this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, man, it's, I understand how the guys don't want to burn bridges, don't want to bury anybody. I'm not concerned about burning bridges. My personal feelings, though, about especially Vince and Shane McMahon are, they were very good to me, at the time, for the time I was there. Shane, especially, and Vince, Vince was very good to me as well.
I tell you, well, no one wants to get the Ultimate Warrior treatment. I think at the end of the day, the DVD and that whole debacle that came out with that. Let me ask you this, because of course I have the conspiracy theories. I wrote that book. Right now, WWE, ECW, not really clicking with anybody, making a lot of hardcore fans cry and run to the hills. Rey Mysterio, world champion of SmackDown, getting beat by everybody. Really nothing huge on SmackDown to excite anybody. John Cena, one of the most unpopular babyface champions as far as crowd reaction, not merchandise sales. Everything seems to be in the toilet except D-Generation X. How much of that is a coincidence, do you think?
Wait just a minute. Are you trying to tell me that you think
mm-hmm.
everything is geared just for failure except for two guys?
Yeah.
No. I just want to make sure I'm clear on this.
Uh-huh.
You're telling me that maybe two people in that organization can engineer and steer Vince in one direction and steer creative, who, I mean, by all accounts, come on, creative is it's a hard job, and head of creative is, oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Well, you know what? Coincidence or not, DX was over mm-hmm. at one time. And I think with Hunter and Sean being his good friends, and talking and saying, hey, why don't we do this and reform and see what happens? Could be coincidence, but
yeah.
I know the engineers of this train, man, and I think they put it on the track and they devised a plan and they mapped out their location, and by the end of the day, they are going to get there. Might take shortcuts,
mm-hmm.
but I think DX is going to be featured because there are people who want it to be featured.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's
power.
Well, here's a question for you, because this is what I found surprising about it. If WWE fully expected ECW to be this great thing that was successful and not end up being kind of almost an afterthought in a way of what it ended up being, does it make sense to hotshot these two angles at the same time, DX and ECW? If WWE really expected ECW to take off and not to kind of be a middle-of-the-ground thing, does it make sense for them to do DX at the same time unless this was part of the plan? You know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel like DX was this money shot that they had and they were waiting on, and ECW, by the same token, was also another trump card that they had in their pocket. To do them both at the same time, it raises some eyebrows, and the fact that one is going so well and one isn't, I think is where the conspiracies kind of come in. Otherwise, it makes no sense for them to reunite them at the same time of the ECW revival, you know?
You do realize that Vince McMahon is never on time for anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vince is constantly having things go on. I mean, he's working all the time on various projects. So I think it keeps him occupied, keeps him busy, And I don't know that he had time to sit down and say, let's coincide these together. I think he was like, let's make this work, let's make that work, let's make this work. I don't know that it took time to stop and think about it, but I do know, or I do feel, that there is a moment where you're caught in the bubble and you're not really aware of anything else except what you're doing at the time. And Vince was doing about 50 things at one time, I mean, all during his day. His day doesn't, you know, his day may start at 5 in the morning and end up till end up at 1:30 the next morning. You know, he is constantly, there's never a downtime for Vince.
Well, and that's, I think that's where his help comes in, and with a situation like this, he's lucky to have his daughter and son-in-law there to help him out with stuff like that. I mean, from even what you're saying, there's so many people contributing to these things that when, I mean, and still, it drives me crazy, because I kind of feel like that somebody, like again, Triple H, and I always go back to him, knows so much about the industry. I can't see, I mean, we kind of saw this coming weeks ago when DX was forming and ECW was forming at the same time. It just seems so bizarre that it always works out in his favor, these coincidences that make him look good when other things are looking bad. You know what I mean?
Why does it seem bizarre?
Oh, no, it doesn't. Well, I mean, to people who don't think about it like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know what, man? And again, that's what this business is. It really is. It's taking care of yourself. And if you're in that position to make millions of dollars, if you're in that position to make yourself what you want to make yourself, who wouldn't do it? I mean, for the love of the business, for the love of the company, it's got to be for the love of yourself, number one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think to paraphrase The Usual Suspects, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that he's the King of Kings. So, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, he got his way. And even now when people are, because I'm doing the interviews about the book, and people are saying, well, Triple H, just step back. And he doesn't really do that anymore. And I'm thinking, are you watching these shows? He's still doing it. He's just not as in your face about it as he was before. I think it's funny. Like, even now, I find myself, the one thing I'm really looking forward to is DX, because really there's really not too much to look forward to on that show besides.
Yeah, pretty much, and I'm sure it'll be very entertaining because those guys will have a little more leeway, and they do click together, and they are real, and they'll say things that will piss people off and make them happy all at the same time.
Absolutely. So. Beautiful. Well, Tom, as we close this thing out, man, any final thoughts on the entire situation, on wrestling as a whole, or anything that we didn't touch upon that you want to let the world know?
You know what? I really am happy that there are guys that are signed with not only ECW, but just being able to be called up, because the main goal for everybody is to go to the big show. And by all means, I don't begrudge anybody making money, and I don't begrudge anybody living out their dream. I hope that ECW makes it, man. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah.
But I really do hope Paul, and I got a lot of friends who re-signed with ECW, and God dang, man, I mean, why not? I hope it comes around, but I really do hope that I hope something changes soon, man.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you.
For the sake of the business.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody out there wants it to fail. I don't think anybody ever wants anything that WWE puts on TV to fail. I think that the negativity that people talk about, I think, is just from people who are looking at it realistically and realize that 9 out of 10 times, it's, I don't want to say easy for things to succeed, but there's different routes that they could take for a lot of things where they could be successful. But unfortunately, kind of egos and power plays hinder that, and I think that kind of frustrates people a lot.
But times change, things change, talent changes. We never know what's going to happen. And by the end of the day, it's going to be what works or what doesn't work is going to be in Vince's lap. So
absolutely. Well, Dr. Tom, I've had a great time. Or actually, I think I should say I had an extreme great time talking to you about
ECW. Fantastic, man.
How is that?
And I appreciate you keeping your swearing down to a minimum as well.
Bad.
I'm really offended.
I don't give a shit about swearing.
Oh, really. For Christ's sake.
Well,
very good.
Tom, peace out, my friend. I thank you guys, everybody, for Dr. Tom Pritchard. This is James Gutman saying thank you so much for listening. Be well, and thank you for sharing our extreme. Take care.